Hi there, and welcome to the YM Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Shaw. The vision of this show is to educate and engage apostolic leaders just like you as you educate, engage, mentor, and disciple the next generation of apostolic students and young adults. One of the ways that you can support this resource is by leaving us a star rating and a review in your favorite podcast app. But to be honest, the thing that we'd really love for you to do is just share this episode with a friend. Share it on social media. Text it to your, you know, your favorite text group. We all get a text chat group that we share memes and crazy videos and stuff we see like in church that our students do. And we swap those stories back and forth. But honestly, throw this episode into that chat. This is an amazing show because we have none other than Pastor Jerry Dean with us. He is the senior pastor of the Pentecostals of Bossier City. He has preached all over the world. He's preached every major event in the United Pentecostal Church. He's probably preached a family camp in your district, and his messages have stirred us and moved us. And this interview is so incredible. I broke down and cried like three times, guys, like no joke. It was so moving as he talks about life and ministry in his 20s, the things he's proud of, the things he wished he did better, and the conversation he would have with a 25-year-old Jerry Dean if the opportunity availed itself. You're going to want to listen to this interview more than once. You're going to want to share it with your friends. You want to share it with every leader in your local church. Whether you're 20, 25, or like me, 38, this is going to speak to you. Reminded me why I love Brother Dean so much and why he's such a gift to the body of Christ. So without any further ado, let's jump into our conversation with Pastor Jerry Dean. Well, Brother Dean, it is such an honor to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be on the YM Leadership Podcast. And our conversation is all about, just to give you some backstory, so that the YM Leadership Podcast for the past little bit has been focusing on giving people kind of nuts and bolts of youth ministry, and I just felt in my heart, I don't want to over spiritualize it, but I just kind of felt that, you know, one of the most important things that we can do to help youth workers in the United Pentecostal Church is not just give them skills, but to build their character and to build them as men and women. And so that's why we have you on the show here today, because the whole focus of this series of interviews that we're doing is called Dear 25-Year-Old Me. And we're talking to elders and experienced ministers like yourself so that we can get some insight and advice. As those of us in our 20s are serving, but I have not been in my 20s for quite some time. And, but that's what we're here to talk to you about today. And I guess our first kind of question is, what were you doing at 25 in life, leadership, ministry? What was life like for you when you were in your 20s?
Oh, okay. I was pastoring a church.
Wow.
When I was 25, which was not terribly unusual back then. Very, very few like ministers were doing youth ministry. Student pastors, you didn't have that. Most of our churches were obviously much, much smaller. And yeah. A lot of your youth leaders were just lay people in the church. So I evangelized for 5 years. Got married during that time, had a baby while we were evangelizing. And then about, I think I was just turned 24 when I started pastoring my first church.
Oh, my
God. In Arkansas, a little place called Moro, Arkansas. Sweet, sweet people. Had about 70 or 80 people. We didn't have a lot of income. I didn't have a lot to do. Anyway, that's what I was doing at 25. I'll tell you a neat little story behind that, if you don't mind.
Of course. Oh, I'd love to hear.
So while we were evangelizing, there was a pastor in a state somewhere between here and Alaska that had surgery on his nose, and he was not able to preach for 3 months. So we went and took care of the church for him My wife and I had a travel trailer. We parked a trailer. Well, during that time, we connected with the people. The pastor fell in love with us, begged us to stay and be his assistant, someday be the pastor. It was a great city. So I asked him to let me finish a few revivals, and I was going out west to California, and I wanted to preach those revivals. So we went out there, and I came back, and they put us up in an apartment. In the meantime, my brother, who pastored this church in Arkansas, called me, and he said, Jerry, they want you to come pastor this church. He was resigning, taking another church. Oh, no, David, man, we're thrilled where we are. We're going to spend our life here. It's just, this is just great, man. People were getting old. I remember one Sunday, 8 people got the Holy Ghost. The pastor wasn't even in church. That was unheard of.
Yeah.
And especially for me in my ministry. But anyway, so we stayed there 8 months, and he called me in one Sunday night and let me go. It's kind of shattered my world.
Oh, wow.
So I called my bro. I didn't know what to do. I mean, a guy in the church that ran a plumbing business called me the next morning and said, hey, I understand you need a job. You want to go to work? And I'm like, I got to do something to take care of my family, you know?
Yeah.
So I had a few places that wanted me to come preach. But anyway, I called my brother back and I said, hey, David, I said, we've been praying about this.
We just, the Lord's just been putting a burden in. It's a burden I can't shake.
That's right. We had preached like 2 revivals there at that church. And anyway, the people wanted us to come. I said, David, do y'all have a pastor? He said, no, Jerry, they want you to come. I'm like, okay, well, I don't remember going and preaching. I think they just voted us in. So that's what I was doing at 25. And, you know, Brother Shaw, this is amazing to me because that little journey to Arkansas forever shaped my life. And what I thought was the end of the world turned out to be the beginning of my ministerial life. And it's just kind of incredible when I look back and see that. My wife and I, we don't know, maybe we were too young. We chose not to be angry or bitter. We never understood why it happened. There was never no explanation given to us by the pastor, so we don't know. But we buried that, left it behind, and went on, and doors began to open for us. So at 25, I was pastoring a church.
You know, this in some of these conversations I've been having, and I've had not in a podcast format, but just, you know, over the just meeting and talking to people, one of the things that I have always been so struck by, and I'll get to the next question in a second, but it's like it seems like in the decades kind of past, in the apostolic church, there was no gradual descent into the deep end of the pool of ministry. It was, for the most part, just a deep end of the pool, and you just kind of got tossed kind of into it. I can't imagine pastoring at 25 years old, pastoring, you know, 70 or 80 people. That is a lot of souls to take care of and a lot of responsibility. And so I'm always in awe of when I hear stories from your generation, Brother Dean. It seems like people are like, well, the Lord spoke to us, and or we felt we got nowhere else to go. Let's go do this. And it's like you packed up your whole family at 24 and like, well, let's move to Arkansas and pastor a church. Don't know if they could pay us, don't know how we're gonna put it together, but we're just gonna do it.
It's exactly how it worked. I mean, there was no shallow end of the pool. I don't know of any church that had a student pastor or youth leader, we would call them in those days, that was actually on the staff at the church. They just didn't exist. There were a lot of people doing the work. Usually some parents in the church had kids in the youth group. That's kind of the way it worked. But we did. We jumped off. Now, here's one of the neat things about my story.
Yeah.
These people were amazing, and just they loved us, man. And I had a little church board, you know, and I didn't know what I was doing. I'm like, I'd say, well, what about this or that? And they were like, hey, Brother Dean, you're the pastor. You tell us. And they were just that kind of people. And we fell in love with them. And here's the truth, Brother Adam. This is amazing. My wife and I look back on those days. We had no money. We just survived. You know, we just survived. But we look back on those, that short time. We weren't there at that church a long time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that we've ever been any happier than when we were during those days. I mean, when it snowed, you know, Brother Wayne called, you want to go rabbit hunting? It's like, it was just, I was ignorant. I could have done a much better job, but I think God had me in training. And I think God was positioning me for what was ahead.
You know, something you said, I don't think I've been kind of more happier. I remember reading that in Reaching Austin, Brother Bernard, who, you know, of course, I mean, the man's got a tremendous amount of accomplishments in life and in ministry. But in his book, he said the same thing. He said the happiest that, you know, he referenced, you know, his wife before, you know, Connie and I was when we were planting the church in the early stages with little kids. That Isn't was that, and you know, it kind of struck me, and it's like, okay, you know, there is a tendency in my generation to want to rush things and rush the process. Let's get ahead. And, I think from what you've just said, and I heard it echoed in his book, that whatever season we find ourselves in right now, there's joy in it and there's growth in it. And even when the responsibility can feel daunting. And so, speaking of which, let's go to the, you know, our next question here. And that is, you know, looking back over this period of time in your life, the evangelism, going to this church and getting let go from the church, then ending up in Arkansas and really kind of learning pastoring on the job in your 20s, having this tremendous amount of responsibility, the chief executive of a local church at 25. What are some of the biggest life and ministry lessons that you learned in your 20s?
I looked over this question, and I think probably the most valuable lesson that I learned in my 20s, Brother Adam, was that if people like you, if you love people and they like you, it will carry you a long ways. Yeah. You know, I know John Maxwell's big line is leadership is influence. And when I look back over that time, we just were kind to people, nice to people, loved people, you know, did what we could to make sure they knew they were appreciated. And that's probably the biggest life lesson I learned in my 20s. You know, leadership is influence. If you don't have influence, you call yourself anything you want to call yourself. But if you don't have influence, you're not leading anybody. That's not just in ministry. That's in every walk of life. And you got to have some influence. Now, influence can be gained in a number of ways. But for me and my wife, I think we gained our influence just by loving people. Just by loving people. Loving their kids. Loving their kids. You know, I know some people don't like this, but I'm a hugger. Yeah. I hug kids. I got kids on Sunday morning right now that run, grab me, and hug me. People love you. They will follow you. And, you know, some influence is automatic when you're a new pastor. Yeah. As Maxwell said, you have a little change in your pocket just because you're the new kid on the block. But after a while, you've got to go beyond that. But that was one of the lessons I learned. Treat people nice, you know?
Yes,
treat
sir.
Treat people nice. Love people.
Yeah.
And that's probably the most valuable thing I learned in my 20s.
That's so wise. It's so big. And again, I'm, you know, comparing is not wise, the scripture says. But one of the things when I reflect, I'm going to be 40 soon. I'm holding on to my 30s with white knuckling on my 30s. I've got a year and a couple of months left in my 30s. I'll be 39 in October of 2023. But one of the things I have noticed in my generation, millennials that were coming up, was there was such an emphasis on competency. So, being the smart guy in the room, knowing the latest methods, having the greatest, techniques, learning the skills kind of the trade. And I think what you said is wise. And it's what we all need to make sure is the biggest tool in our leadership tool belt, that people do not care. It's probably John Maxwell. He's coined all these little sayings. It's people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah.
And having relationships with people. So, student pastors, it's not just enough that you know your kids, but you have to develop a relationship with their parents. You need to be connected to them.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't have mom and dad in your corner, you can preach to you get a nosebleed and nothing's going to happen.
You don't even have a corner.
You don't have anything. You don't have anything at all, because especially in the church. I was thinking about this, and I'm sorry to go down these rabbit trails, Brother Dean. I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking, as a pastor, I really have no power. I have no, every bit of authority that people give me in their lives is volunteered.
Absolutely.
So they can go somewhere else. But if I love them and I build a relationship, that creates loyalty.
Right.
And people will stay. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
What are some things that you're proud of in your 20s?
I don't want to say proud.
Thankful, when you look back, you're thankful and you're like, this was something me and my wife in our ministry, whether it's ministry or family, we got this right. Okay. We got this right.
I'm gonna get real transparent, okay?
Yes, sir.
I'm gonna get real transparent. Number one, it was in my 20s that let me back up just a little bit. We were pastoring. I grew up in Texas. My dad pastored there all of my life, from the time I was first grader, and I love Texas. That's where I got my local license under V.A. Gidrose, who's an icon in Texas.
Yeah.
Anyway, we were in Arkansas, and we get a call from this church in Texas where I had preached, I think, 2 or 3 or 4 revivals when I was evangelizing, some when I was single, and I know of at least one revival after I got married. So their pastor resigned, and they asked us to come. It was a small town about 25 miles from where I grew up. This would take us back close to our parents. Okay.
Yeah.
My wife's family and my family, we would be within real quick driving distance. Well, that was attractive. It was a nice church. It was a sizable church in those days. I would imagine they had 125 people, which was a pretty big church. Yeah. But we went down there and preached. I didn't tell anybody. I called my presbyter. I said, look, we're going down here. I'll be praying for you. Well, I got home, and we never got the release we wanted. I got home, and I had a letter in the mail from James Lumpkin, my superintendent. The letter, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was like 1:30 in the morning. He's typing this letter out on a typewriter. I have it in my files. And basically, the letter was saying, don't get in a rush. Be patient. Well, my immediate thought was, brother, my presbyter called him. Yeah. So I called my presbyter. I said, I hadn't told anybody. I promise you, Brother Dean. So I knew that was a sign from God. Yeah. About 2 months later, the brethren in Arkansas voted me in as youth president of the Arkansas district, which was amazing. It opened so many doors for me. So I embraced this wholeheartedly. I jumped in with both feet. Aubrey Giroux was my secretary, district youth secretary. He made me look good so many times because he's organized and I wasn't. He's administrative and I'm not. But I do know how to love people. And I was youth president for 5 years. I worked hard at She's for Christ. We broke every record. I got awards. We'd go to conference, you know, and I'm grateful I had that opportunity. I've been raising money ever since for missions or something.
Yeah.
But I got my feet. But I'm going to tell you again, Brother Adam.
Yes, sir.
The people, the ministers in Arkansas, I knew every pastor of every church. We had, I think, 145 churches then. I knew every pastor of every church, had shaken it probably 99% of their hands, hugged their necks, thanked them for their support. And, I mean, we had so many increases in She's for Christ. It was amazing. I had a great youth committee. They all worked hard. It goes back to what I was saying a while ago. You just mix with people.
Yeah.
You're transparent with people. But let me tell you, this is the transparent part.
Yeah.
So by this time, I had moved, right after I was voted in as youth president, we moved to Jonesboro, Arkansas. We had a great church. Now we've got maybe 180 people. We have a Christian school. I'm youth president. My platter's full. I'm busy every day. I stay busy. I'm getting invites to go preach. Guess who's getting left out in this thing? I have a wife. While we were in Jonesboro, Ryan was born.
Yeah.
I have a wife. I have a daughter. I have a son. And my wife and I, she was struggling. I didn't know how to fix my problem.
Yeah.
I was up to my head in ministry, doing the work of God. I love my wife dearly. We were not going to get a divorce, but we knew it wasn't the will of God to live like we were living.
Yeah.
So I called my presbyter, same guy I called before. Me and my wife need to come and talk to you. And he, come on over here, man. Walked in that house, embarrassed. I'm youth president. We're struggling in our house. I'm being transparent. I'm just telling
you. Sir.
People know this. I don't mind hiding it. And we just said, look, we need some help. Please give us some direction. I never forget. This was Brother Bobby McCool. He jumped up out of his chair and he said, Brother Dean, do you think doctors ever get sick? And I'm like, well, I'm sure they do. He said, you know what they do? They go see a doctor. And I'm like, oh, okay. Man, I remember me and my wife, he started off, his wife was the quietest, sweetest thing on the planet. He said, I've had to walk off the platform before I preached and tell my wife I'm sorry. And my wife and I are like, you mean y'all had problems? It's like, no.
Yeah.
You say, what are you proud of? You know what? That's one of the things that I'm more proud of than anything else in my life.
Oh, man.
I asked for help when I needed help.
Now you're going to make me cry.
Yeah, I'm crying too. We do some marriage seminars, and you know, it's that proverb, there's safety in a multitude of counsel. You don't go arrogant. Nobody in our church knew. My mother and daddy didn't know. My wife's parents didn't know. My brothers didn't know. Nobody knew.
Yeah.
We needed help. If you would have looked at us from the outside, you would have thought we were the happiest couple in the world. We never quit loving each other. Our kids didn't have a clue. Any intense fellowship we had, as Brother Tenney called it, would be in the privacy of our bedroom or when the kids weren't around. But you know what? I don't remember all the advice he gave us that day, to be honest with you. I just remember how much it helped us knowing that we weren't by ourselves. And obviously, if I had to live without my wife today, I'd be the most miserable man on the planet. So my 20s, I went and got help. That's what I'm proud of.
I'm, you know, this is an audio medium. People can't see, but that I've been, the tears have been threatening to roll down my face. I keep rubbing them because
well, I didn't make you cry.
Oh man, I just think that so many of us, Brother Dean, we're so achievement oriented. I mean, I know I am.
That was me. That was
you know,
me.
There's this part of us. Sometimes you get your identity gets you know wrapped up in doing good because you're like if I do good then I'm worthy. And it can turn you into a workaholic pretty quick. And I think this is such a great message that at the end of your life, at the end of our ministries, the people that are really going to be around us is going to be our family. And so when our family is in trouble, you don't hide that. You didn't hide it. You had every reason to try to be like, well, I'm going to save face. I don't want the brethren to think this. You know, all those thoughts. But you loved your wife so much and you loved your family so much that you were willing to go be vulnerable and say, we need help right now. And the fact that after how long have you been in ministry now? How long have you been preaching, Brother Dean?
Let's see. I'm 70 years old. I started full-time evangelizing at 19. So what would that be? 51 years.
Oh my goodness. That over this, you've preached conferences. You've been all over the world. You've preached general conference. I don't know how many times. And what you're most proud of is that when you needed help in your family, you went and got it. That like that. It makes me want to.
Well, Brother Adam, if you lose your family, what do you have? You don't have anything.
Right. You don't have anything.
I have three amazing kids, you know, and Gene and I, we never sought or even thought about going to get an attorney. We didn't do that. I was tired of my wife not being happy, and I've made tons of mistakes since then. Okay.
Oh yeah. Just, of course.
It's like. You know, Brother Tenney told us one year at men's conference, he said, me and my wife never considered divorce. He said, we considered murder a few times.
get out of the truck and have a fight in the parking lot, but we're going to stay together. what are some things that you wish you would have done in your 20s?
Okay. Back when I was pastoring at small church, there are a couple of options. I don't know. People didn't think in this way then, but I didn't have a lot to do. I mean, I may have made in the time we were there, maybe five hospital visits. You know, I preached Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, and taught a Sunday school lesson on Sunday morning. But I would have pursued my education if I had my life to live over again. I would have pursued my education, not necessarily to get a degree, just to increase my knowledge. People are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. That's what I would have done. I don't have, or I would have found me, and I would have been a bivocational pastor. I would have provided better for my family, and started making plans for the future in my 20s. I wouldn't have, you know, it was a big deal back in those days, like, to say, well, I'm full time. Well, yeah. What's so great about that? I know pastors who've been very successful in ministry that were bivocational. And I would have done that. I wish I would have, but I would have also liked to have pursued my education a little bit. You know, nobody's ever said a word to me. I've pastored several churches. Never when I interviewed the board did anybody ask me about my education. That was never a question.
Yeah.
It was a different world. Brother M.D. Treese was talking to a group of us young preachers one time down at our campground. And so I asked Brother Treese, I said, Brother Treese, which one of the translations do you like? I mean, would you advise us on any? And Brother Treese, you know, the Greek and the Hebrew scholar who read his text out of a Greek Bible or something, you know, and translated as he went along. And he said, well, Brother Dean, he said, there are very few translations, real actual translations. I'm like, I don't know what you mean. He said, well, they're most of them are paraphrases. They're not translations. Yeah. The King James Bible is a translation. Brother Bernard may listen to this podcast and say, take that part out, because I'm just telling you what Brother Treese said.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, Brother Treese, what do we do? I'm probably 50 years old at this time. He said, well, you need to learn Greek and Hebrew. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, going to do that.
That sounds easy. But, you know, when I was younger, those are the two things I would have done. I always tried to teach Bible studies, you know. Yeah. That was a big deal back then, home Bible studies. But in those early churches, I didn't have a lot of opportunities. My first church was in the country. Didn't even know a whole lot of people in the community. It was crazy. But I would have learned a little bit more about us being a successful pastor. I could have done that through education, I think.
Now, what are some things you wish? Now, this is a hard one. What are some things you wish you had not done?
I wish I hadn't read so many Lula Moore books.
They're great books, though.
They are great books. I read everything he had. Yeah, I was evangelizing, and a pastor had all those books in his office. He said, have you ever read any Lula Moore books? I'm like, no, I didn't know who he was. So for the rest of that revival, which lasted 3 weeks, I spent my days in his office reading those books. So I started buying them. They are great books, and you need leisure time. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I probably spent too much time doing that. But, you know, basically, there's not a lot of things that I wished I hadn't done in my 20s I look back. Probably a little more time in ministry and should have spent more time with my family. That's probably a deal. I remember one time, Brother Adam, our car was loaded up, suitcases in the back. I had two kids, Jeremy and Charity. We're going to take a little vacation. We never had a lot of money, so we couldn't do a lot. The phone rings in the house. We didn't, you know, that was before any kind of recorders or anything. I ran in, answered the phone. One of the members in the church had died. And we had to unload our car. We had to unpack. Our kids were devastated. I should have taken them the next week. I let ministry get in the way too many times. That's a regret.
Yeah.
A big regret.
This has been an incredible conversation, Brother Dean. And you know, one of the reasons why we had you on the show is I knew we're going to get the real Brother Dean. And this has been so, so good, so helpful. Here's the last question, and I appreciate your time. I really do. I love hanging out with you. You know, and pretty much the world knows that Ryan and I are really great friends, very close friends, and that's afforded me this enormous privilege of being able to go get coffee with you and hang out with you. And so I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity that I've been able to have this conversation with you again. I want you to imagine, this is the last question. I want you to imagine that, you know, if you had some opportunity, I don't know, you know, of a science or technology or something like that. I'm not a science fiction guy. That's what Ryan's for. I want you to imagine that if you were able to have a conversation with a 25-year-old Jerry Dean, because there's going to be a 25-year-old youth pastor that's listening to this show, or a 25-year-old youth worker, or a 23-year-old youth worker that is going to be hanging on, you know, the words that you say. But if you were able to, like, you took me out for coffee, you know, in Bossier, oh my goodness, I think it's better part of 5 or 6 years ago. But you were able to sit down with a 25-year-old Jerry Dean, what would you say?
First of all, I want to say this, there were great men that impacted my life greatly.
Yeah.
When I was a 25-year-old and didn't get to hear them a lot, but when I would hear them preach, it would be amazing. And you're going to probably edit this out. But Brother Adam, your message at our Dominion Men's Conference in Louisiana was off the charts. I just
thank you.
Was amazing. Don't edit that out, please.
I won't.
It was amazing. So if I could have a conversation with my 25-year-old self, I would say, number one, work on your prayer life. It took me a long time. Not that I didn't pray. The only lesson my dad ever gave me about ministry was, don't you go to that pulpit without praying, son. So, but I think I would study and read and learn everything I could about prayer. And I would get lost in prayer. That's the first thing I would do, because that teaches you to quit leaning on your flesh. We have the most talented young preachers I have ever seen in my life. They're not just talented. They are good. I've told people a lot of times that when I was in my 20s, we had about four guys that were just preaching all the youth camps. And I could name them. I won't do it because this is a podcast. It's going to a lot of people. And you would know those people. You would know all of them. But it's not that way anymore. We've got so many talented, gifted young preachers. It's incredible. However, I would tell, if I was 25 years old right now, do not lean on your giftedness or your talents. Utilize them, yes, but make sure you have been in a place of prayer. That's the first thing I would tell myself. Develop a prayer life that never ends. The next thing I would tell myself is never put your family, never put your church, your ministry ahead of your family. I would do that. I would tell myself, okay, family first. Well, God's first, but your family. That's a cliche, Brother Adam. We all say that. Unfortunately, it's just a cliche that too few people actually do. And I would do that. I would make sure I did it. Another conversation I would have with myself was, don't get yourself in debt. Take David Ramsey. We didn't have it then. Do whatever you got to do. Get out of debt. And I'm going to tell you why I tell young preachers that. I had a young preacher come and said, what would be your advice to me as a young preacher? I said, get out of debt. And he looked at me like I was crazy. So now I have to explain to you, because you may have ministry opportunities. This guy was in a church and felt a call to preach, had his local license. And I said, you may have ministry opportunities that come up that if you're in debt, you won't be able to take, because you're strapped and you got to have income. So I would do that. I got in the debt trap accidentally. It's just kind of crazy the way it all happened. It took me a long time to get out of it. But once I made that commitment, God helped me. And these are some things I would tell a 25-year-old Jerry Dean. You know, I had all this free time. I've always tried to go to the pulpit prepared, but God help me. I don't know how they tolerated some of the, I had my notes on a note card, a 3x5 note card. Okay. I've got them in a file. It's like, cause these preachers back then didn't believe in notes.
Yeah.
And I now that I look back, I wasn't prepared for that pulpit. It was Anthony Mangan and Vesta Mangan. They read their sermons. I'm like, you can do that and impact people? Are you serious? So I would do that. So let me go back over them. Number one, your relationship with God. You got to have it. I mean, John Piper said, that's one thing social media has taught us, is we really did have time to pray. I would get my prayer life down. Absolutely, I would do that. I would make sure my family knows that they're ahead of everything else in my life. I would do that. Don't ever go to that pulpit unprepared. You're not good enough. If you're 25 years old, You're not good enough. Okay? Go prepared. There are few people that can do that. There are some. Joel Urshan never looks at a note. Okay? You're not Joel Urshan. Maybe you will be someday. You know, Brother Bernard rarely looks at a note. Trust me, you're not David Bernard. Jerry Jones, one of the greatest preachers of our generation, uses notes. Okay? Be prepared for that pulpit. Don't wing it. Everybody will know you're winging it. But I will tell you this. If you hadn't read Ravenhill's books, read every one of them. I know they're old. They're not out of date. They are not out of date. He's still in touch. I watched a little clip of one of our preachers. He's relatively young. My wife showed it to me just yesterday. And he was just doing some old-time preaching, and I told my wife the crowd was responding beautifully. I told Gina, I said, you know what, Gina? You could feel the Holy Ghost on this little clip that his church posted of this guy preaching. It really doesn't have to be complicated. People love for you to talk to them in everyday language. Mm-hmm. And be transparent. 25 years old, be transparent. I know we got to get off, but I got to tell you a story.
So, go for it. I cleared my whole day.
Well, I got an appointment in 14 minutes.
Okay.
But look, so I was on the, I guess they still have it. You would know this. We had the General Youth Committee. Then we had an executive, what did they call that? Executive Youth Committee, where each region had a youth president was on this committee.
Oh, yeah. Planning committee is what they called it when I was on.
Yeah, I think they call it something else. So, you know, when we would go, if it was on a Wednesday, they have chapel at what is now World Headquarters. Well, Brother Urshan, he would say, you go to chapel. So we loved it when C.M. Becton preached. If you stop your meeting, whatever you're doing, you go to chapel. C.M. Becton preached this message on holy waste. C.M. Becton impacted my life. He was incredible, man. He's incredible. You'd sit down, he'd go to break room when I was at headquarters and drink coffee with everybody. I'm like, C.M. Becton. I got to take a few trips with him. He preached a sermon called Holy Waste. Okay? It was about Mary breaking open the box. It was 15 minutes long. I took that home and preached the hound dog out of it. So at our next meeting, we're in this chapel again. And whoever was in charge that day said, hey, we've got these youth presidents here. We want them all to say something. So I got up and I said, last time we were here, Brother Becton preached a sermon called Holy Waste. And I said, the church back home really enjoyed that message. Well, everybody got tickled. I will never forget Sister Margie Becton, Brother Becton's wife, came up to me laughing after that chapel service. And she said, Brother Dean, I love you because you're transparent. You know, yes. There's nothing wrong with giving a little credit. So yeah. Brother Becton told me later, he said, well, Brother Dean, I try them out at chapel. If they'll work in the chapel service, they'll work anywhere. If you've ever been to chapel, I've thought about it. They bring these people off. They used to bring them out of their, you know, away from their desk, bring them out of the back. At that time, we had our printing presses going and the mail room, and they bring them out and ask them to have church. It's probably not an easy transition. But anyway. Be transparent. That's so important. 25-year-old, there's some things I wouldn't change for the world. You know, we learned some lessons the hard way. And if there's somebody, if you're a young preacher and you have somebody that don't like you, just love them. I've been there. Go to a few funerals with them. Dedicate their babies. Walk through some valleys with them. Pray with them in the hospital. Win them over. It may take a few years. It did here. when I won them over, I won them for life. And many of them, I've now preached their funerals, and they love me dearly, and I'm thankful for it. So there you have it, Brother Adam.